My name is Jill Wolf. I'm 37 years old. Today is July 8th, 2017. I'm at the Chicago Cultural Center with my friend and fellow advocate.
My name is Kathy Hewitt. I'm 60 years old. This is July 8th, 2017, and I'm here with Jill, who is my friend and savior.
Well, shalom to you, my friend. We share a favorite person in common. I'm going to just put in your words in your mouth that she's one of your favorite, because she's one of my favorite. And it's my mom.
Yes.
Tell me about the first time you met my mom, and at least what you remember.
The first time I met your mom was at the airport. I was bringing in a puppy that she was getting for me. And when she saw the puppy, she started crying, and she was emotional. And I felt a connection with her right then and there.
She's special.
She is special.
Yeah, and you guys kept in touch. You brought us Ozzy.
Yes.
Ozzy has taken my place as her favorite child, which is okay. He's cuter than I am. But we also, you and I became friends, at least through the platform of social media. And I got to kind of follow some of just the awesome photos you take and hear your comments or see what you wrote about Ozzy. And that actually was a great opportunity for us to get to know each other a little bit more, right?
Mm-hmm. It was, yes.
And I kind of feel like even though this is the first time we've met, like we're kind of old friends who just met.
Yes, I agree.
Tell me a little bit about, and this feels kind of random to ask, but what the platform of social media and say our friendship on there maybe has opened up for you or any opportunities that came along as a result?
Being friends with you on social media, I was able to find that there was help for me with my hepatitis C journey. That I didn't know there was help out there before.
Did you know that I worked in Hep C?
No.
No.
I did not.
So what I remember was this post that you put out about, I almost saw it as like this coming out of, hey, I'm Kathy. I'm this cool chick. I got this really great photography. Look at my dogs, all this stuff. And I got this crazy thing called Hep C. And I've kept it to myself for many, many years. Tell me about the decision to come out. Tell me about what fueled not speaking about it.
It was shameful. I was shamed when I was diagnosed with non-A, non-B. People shunned me. They wouldn't talk to me. They wouldn't come near me. And so I spent the rest of the years being afraid to let people know that I had it. And so I never told anybody. My family knew it, and they were the only ones that knew it. Nobody I dated knew it.
Because had they known, you would have continued to have been shunned.
Correct.
And how did this affect your life beyond, say, letting people know that you had it? I mean, maybe work or home or anything. How your health? What was impacted?
I became healthier because of it. I'm grateful that I had hepatitis C because it taught me, it kept me from mistreating my body. Hmm. I took care of my liver. I was aware of it. You know, I still had a weight on my shoulders over it because I never knew if I was going to get sick again because I did get sick from it.
How so? What happened to you?
What I did was I lost all energy. I had no energy whatsoever. And anybody walked in the room that was sick, my immune system was shut down. I got sick. So I was sick constantly and had no energy and was not really able to work, not really able to drive, and really not even able to get off the couch.
And did you know that it was because of your Hep C that that was happening?
No, not until about the fifth or sixth doctor that I went to, and I begged them, and I told him after every doctor had said, you've got a virus, and, you know, just go on home, and you got a virus, you get over it. And the last doctor I went to was an ear, nose, throat specialist. And when he said, we have a virus, I looked at him and meant that if you don't find what's wrong with me, I'm going to kill myself. Hmm. And he listened to me. And he did a simple blood test and told me I had non-A, non-B.
And no one else had done a blood test before
nope.
that? Wow. What did it feel like to feel pretty crappy and go to all these doctors who just keep telling you the same thing to eventually get to this ENT and say, dude, I'm going to take my life if you don't tell me more than just this is a virus? I mean, tell me what that experience was like for you.
It was very discouraging because doctors treated me as if I was just crazy because I didn't look sick. I wasn't yellow, so I didn't have yellow eyes. I just didn't have absolutely no energy. But it was relieved to know what was wrong with me. But when I asked the doctor, now what do we do? How do I, you know, get cured? He said, there's nothing I can do for you. There is no cure. Then that was a whole nother process I had to go through and figure out what to do at that point.
How old are you at this point?
I'm six. Oh, at that point? At that point, I was my early 30s. Mm.
And so when this doctor said, you have this and there's no cure, what doors did that close for you? What doors did that open for you?
The doors it closed to me was, okay, I'm not going back to the doctor. And then I started researching. That was before computers. That was before social media. I started researching and going to health food stores and finding out that I could take certain, like, vitamin C and milk thistle and certain, you know, take care of myself. And that's what I did.
And did that help at all?
It took me a good 2 years to get my energy back. And I still battled thinking that I didn't have, I don't think I ever really got my full self back. But it did, I think it did help in the fact that I was healthy and took care of myself. Yes, I believe it helped.
And so was it, you know, from the outside, because you weren't telling people that you had Hep C.
No.
Right? And so from the outside, maybe people were just looking, it was like, oh, here's just a healthy, here's a health nut.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for the people I work with, because the word got around that I had hepatitis, and that's when they shunned me and nobody had anything to do with me. But other mm-hmm. people didn't know. They couldn't look at me and say I was sick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. And at this time, because you found out that you had Hep C before we knew about Hep C. Like you said, it was non-A,
yes.
non-B. And you were young, like early 20s when this happened, for when you found out.
When I first got it, I was in my early 20s, but I found out I had it, I was in my 30s, early 30s.
And so what's going on in your life at this time? I mean,
I was living with a boyfriend. I had a son. I couldn't take care of my son. Fortunately, my boyfriend did. I was trying to work, wasn't really able to work. It was a very difficult time.
What changed? Because I see a woman who's got a lot of energy in front of me who raises these dogs that my mom likes more than me. What changed?
You know, I think that who I am is somebody who won't quit. I know people that have quit. And I don't have the ability to say, well, I'm going to just stop. And I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't take care of myself. I started working out, became a fitness instructor. I didn't quit smoking for another 10 years, but I did quit smoking. And at 50, I became a fitness instructor.
Wow. There's been a lot of things that have made you strong. I don't know you well, but the few things that you've told me about, I'm a bit like, wow, in awe that, you've gotten through some things that you've gotten through. I don't want to name them. I'm curious if, what's some of those hardest things that you've persevered just given, given
being
your
homeless,
personality?
Being yeah. pregnant and being homeless. Mm. You know, going through divorces and pretty much raising my son by myself. Going through being so sick that I couldn't work.
I can't think of anything else. How does that contribute to who you are today? What did you learn from all those situations?
Well, I was raised in a fear-based home.
What do you mean by that?
I was a bedwetter. So that was shameful. And the family actually would put me in the corner and do their finger at me. The whole family was told to do it and go, shame, shame on you. And so when I was shamed for having hepatitis, well, non-A, non-B, that's what came up for me, was all that shame. And so I left home at age 18, not knowing what I was facing in the world, not able to navigate paying bills because I wasn't taught. I struggled. I made it. You know, I got married, I got pregnant. I became homeless, survived homelessness, knowing that now I have nothing to fear because it's not a lifestyle I like or want, but I can live through it.
Yeah, you survived it.
Yeah.
Wow. And today, you got a big home.
Yes.
Tell me about your home.
I have a farm in the country.
Wow.
9 acres. A 1903 farmhouse, which I love, love, love. So it's heaven for me.
Mm. What does it feel like to be home for you?
Safe, secure, not shamed.
Mm.
That just came up for me recently with one of my sisters that I felt she said something to me that took me back to being that little girl.
Mm.
And my mother recently died a couple of years ago, and since she's died, I refuse to accept that shame anymore. So freedom to be who I am, who I really am, which is somebody I like.
Yeah. And how powerful shame is in the way that it really shackles us.
Yes, it does.
How, breaking of those shackles of shame and being in a home where you can be out and proud of whoever you are or you aren't, right? How do you see shame continuing to impact maybe the people around you or continuing ways that you have to fight off shameful thoughts that you maybe still have?
For example, when my sister said something to me, I am very on social media. I'm very on social media a lot, but I'm very careful about what I put on there. And I don't put trash on there. And the fact that my sister called me, told me, and said, don't dare put that on Facebook.
The Hep C thing?
No, not the Hep C, but it was something else.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, she took me back to that corner being shamed. It was like, trust me. I am 60 years old. It is time for you to trust me. I am trustworthy. So that came up for me recently. And it made me realize that I had been living my life affected by it, not really going back to where I was, but not knowing that that's where I was going.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know that's where I was going. Other people, knowing that other people feel shame, and I know they do. Maybe more people, depending on their upbringing, some people more than others, but it's a shame that we feel that way.
Yeah. And so what was going on for you, knowing that shame was really part of why you didn't tell people about hepatitis C in particular, something that affected your health that you really had to learn so much about to then sort of help your body get back into a better place. What was the process to come out, if you will, on Hep C?
I had found out that there was a cure. Back in the day when it was interferon, I knew about that, but I was not going to go there. I'd heard too many horror stories. I didn't watch the TV commercials that told me about Harvoni. And then a dear friend of mine told me about it.
And told you about Harvoni.
Harvoni, and that there was a cure. And so when I actually, thank God for Obama, because I had insurance for the first time, the Affordable Care Act. Without him, I didn't have insurance. So I was brave enough to go to the doctor and say, can I get this cure?
So your friend came to you and was like, your friend obviously knew you had Hep C.
Yes.
Right?
Well, she didn't. She told me her story.
Ah.
And by her opening up to me and telling me her story, I then was able to tell her mine.
And did you do it right away, right there, right then, when she told you her story?
I think so. It was okay. And then she told me she had been cured, and I was like, really?
That sparked your interest.
Right.
What did you do from there?
So then I went to the doctor, and they, turned it in, and
approved. You went to the doctor like, hey, doc, give me this drug. I want to get cured.
Yeah. And so he turned it in, and the insurance company approved me. And then Aetna and North Carolina backed out of the Affordable Care Act. So in the middle of my treatment, they dropped me, even though they had approved me for the full treatment. And so I had to go with Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina. And then they denied me
access to the medication.
Access in the middle of my treatment.
So you had 3 months of treatment you needed to take, right?
Correct. And I'd only had 1 month.
So you were 1/3 of the way through.
Correct.
When, given what's going on in our healthcare exchange and what's going on in our country, just things beyond your control shifted. mm-hmm. which made you have to go to a different insurance company, mm-hmm. which had restrictions. And so they're like, oh, even though you've started this and you're one third of the way, sorry, we're not giving you this.
Right. And so at this point, I can see a cure in sight. Mm. So I started fighting, and I went public on social media, which was a huge step for me. Mm.
When you say you started fighting, was social media your first step?
That was my first.
That was your first sort of yes. punch in the fight.
Right. And then I called the North Carolina State, North Carolina State Insurance Commissioner, whatever it is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then my brother-in-law was penning a letter, and you responded to my Facebook post. And I can't remember what I put in the post, but for the first time in 38 years that I'd had it, I went public. And I went public. I mean, when I went public, public.
Yeah, you did.
And at that point, I was angry that I was so grateful for Obama that I even had the opportunity to get the drug. And then I was angry with the system that said, okay, well, we're gonna cut you off in the middle of your treatment, or third way through your treatment, which was ridiculous.
Did you know why they were cutting you off?
Well, they denied the first client. The first time the insurance, they turned it in, they denied it. No, I don't really know. And I was in the throes of finding out and going for the jugular. I was not going to, you give me a cure, then you stop. And I did find out that I could have got the drug from India, and I could have got it within my means. And so I knew at that point that that was what I was going to do, if that's what I needed to do. But
so
I was
say within your means, basically.
I had the money.
Well, and because had you tried to pay for it in the United States.
I couldn't have done that, no.
Couldn't have afforded that.
$84,000 is what the cost was in the United States.
And is that what they told you?
Yes. So each day I took a pill, I realized I was taking a $1,000 pill each day. I was grateful each day. And then for them to say, oh, no, well. So the second time it was turned in, they did accept it. But I was already prepared to go to battle. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to start this all over again. And I didn't have a lapse, but I thought there was going to be a lapse in my treatment, which would have probably meant I would have had to start over again. Mm-hmm.
And so I remember reaching out to you, and I just said, let's get in touch with each other.
Yes.
Because what happens is that so many people don't know about the various resources that exist to get access to the med. That doesn't have to include India, right?
Right.
And sometimes that is an option for people. But we started connecting.
We did.
I'm curious sort of what sticks out for you there, and really what was the larger response that you got?
The way I felt when you responded to me, now I'm going to cry, is there was help, and that I didn't have to go it alone.
Right.
That there were people that I'd spent 30 years of knowing, but I'd had it for 38 years of knowing and shame that I needed to hide it, when in truth there were people that would help me. And that there were more people out there, and people reached out to me where their father just died from it, and wished they had been healthy. And, but the fact that you were there was like a savior for me. It was like an anchor. It was like a beacon of hope. It was like, okay, I've got this because I've got help. I didn't have to go it alone.
Yeah.
And that was huge.
And what was kind of so cool, I just kind of got chills right there, because really, I didn't do anything but tell you that I support you. And I was in Chicago and you were south, right? I was like, hey, girl, I got you. We will get this. And just I'm confident we'll get this. You did all the work. You did all of the trekking and going for the jugular. I just maybe figuratively held a hand up behind your back, mm-hmm. letting you know, hey, you're doing the right thing.
Yes, you did. But that was what I needed.
It says so much about you. I mean, knowing how to navigate that process. I mean, who the heck would know how to navigate that process?
Right. I didn't.
What did you learn from it?
First of all, never give up and never take no from an insurance company. That the healthcare system in the United States is important that we keep our healthcare. The Affordable Care Act was so important for me. The fact that so many people, and I know I'm not the only one, don't know that you and people like you are out there to help mm-hmm. us navigate it, because it is a tough road to navigate. You know, and you gave me some contacts to talk to, and it was an enlightening experience, and it was letting go and shrugging off the shame and knowing that there were thousands and thousands of people just like me.
Millions,
oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and think of sort of the ripple effect of you coming out of shame. And I'm, so you're cured today.
I am cured today.
Would you say the feelings of shame about Hep C are different today?
I don't have the shame anymore.
And so what has the lifting of shame with that, what other parts of your life are maybe impacted?
I changed my life totally.
How so?
I had the guts to buy a farm by myself, to move by myself with a lot of paid help, but to actually follow my dream. And it for me, it's kind of, I don't know what the words to say, but I'm living not only my dream, but hundreds and thousands of other people's dream. And so people want to come and visit me and see me, and they're not shunning me because I came out about hepatitis C. And today, I mean, I told the airline attendant what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I was just cured of hepatitis C. And I think now that I've, you know, I wouldn't have shouted it out to the world like I am now if I still had it. But I want to shout it out to the world now because I want people to know that have it, mm-hmm. that are hiding it, that there's help.
Yeah. And that life without shame is yes. What?
Oh, that's a blessing. Life is so much better. You know, there's no, I don't have to hide anything. I don't have to be afraid that somebody's going to find out my deep, dark secret. Mm. That, you know, I don't have to be afraid that if I'm cut, that I have to make sure nobody gets near me. If I'm bleeding, that, you know, don't help me unless you got gloves on.
Mm-hmm. What other, outside of health, what other ways does releasing that shame positively or maybe negatively in some cases affect other parts of your life?
I think I just lost 22 pounds in a couple of months. And I really believe that was the shame.
Hmm. You lost the shame.
I did. And that was 22 pounds I shouldn't have been carrying. And it's gone now.
You know, just... I, for some reason, you as a little girl being put in a corner and sort of poked at, or literally poked at, that image popped into my head. And naturally, when we're poked and provoked, we do find ways to protect ourselves and cushion the blow, if you will. I'm sorry that you were shamed so early for probably just being scared and being a kid. Kids wet their bed, and think about the impact. And I guess I just want to let you know that it's powerful sitting from here and being able to see the cycles that you've broken in your own lifetime, still very young with a lot of life left to live, with a liver that's really happy, without shame. So what's next for you? What does that open up for you?
I think because of all the shame that I carried, I also wasn't able to keep a relationship, a partnership going. And for the first time in a long time, and I haven't even been in a relationship for 14 years, that I feel open.
Open to relationship, right. Open to love.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, tell me a little bit about the your challenges with relationships. And, you know, you talk about being raised with the fear in you and probably told to be a certain way. How did that influence how you developed relationships later on?
I was raised back in the day where women weren't supposed to be, they were supposed to be their secretaries, nurses, mothers, wives, and that they were supposed to stay home and keep their mouth shut. And that was where I was raised. I was raised to be a wife. Well, that's not really who I am. I'm very independent and very assertive. And so my struggles with men were I tried to be the wife. I tried to do it. It didn't work. I get out of that one. I get in another one. Same thing. Didn't work. You know, and a lot of men say they want an independent woman until they get one. Mm. So I'm not good at being the wife material, but I'm okay with that. You know, that's who I am. I can't imagine being anybody else. Mm. You know, and I think a relationship now, I would approach it differently. I don't know how I'd approach it. And I don't say it wouldn't be a struggle for me, mm-hmm. but I don't have to be a wife and a mother now. I am a mother. I'm very proud to be a mother.
Yes.
But I'm not a wife.
Yes. Tell me about your son.
My son is the love of my life. Mm. You know, when he was born, when people, the moment he was born, I knew true love.
Where'd you feel it?
All over. Mm. He was, and I know a lot of women, and it disturbs me when I say, when the moment of birth was just the biggest miracle and the best, you know, he filled every pore in my body with love. It was, and I can't say that I was the best mother, and I just admitted to him I was a terrible mother, but it wasn't from lack of love. Mm-hmm. So he and I are close. We're very close. I was in and out of relationships, unfortunate for him, mm-hmm. and I raised him the best that I was able to do. I'm not a grandmother, would love to be one, because I'm much wiser, which why grandmothers are so important.
Absolutely.
They've already learned the lessons.
Right. And then you get to give them back.
Right, okay. Exactly.
Josh, take your kid. Bye, guys.
Right. So yeah. He and I were really close.
And was there, did you feel the need to hide Hep C from him?
He knew it from the beginning, so.
Mm-hmm. And so he was...
he was around 9.
When you...
When I knew.
When you knew about it.
I had not an A, not B.
Because you had contracted Hep C from a blood transfusion, what, like 9 months after Josh was born?
6 months after he was born.
6 months after Josh was born. And so then it took a number of years for you to find out that you had this virus in your blood.
Yes.
So he knew right away that when you found out that you had non-A, non-B.
Yes.
Do you remember his reaction at all? Did he have one?
No, because I was so sick that I wasn't capable of taking care of him. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think my family thought, well, you know, we're going to be taking care of Kathy because she's going to be the one that's going to need special care and is going to be sick. Mm-hmm. And so I think he probably was afraid of losing me too, mm-hmm. because, I mean, at that point, I didn't know. Who knew?
How did you see, you know, now that you stand healthy 20 plus pounds later with the cured liver and cirrhosis and liver cancer is not on your horizon, what do you see as the impact on your child going through that next to you?
The impact on him, he's coming to visit me for his birthday Monday, is that he and I had one of the most honest conversations on the phone the other day. Because I could talk to him, and I think the reaction I got from him, and I feel like this is what he was feeling, and I may be wrong, but was, oh, you're not perfect like you pretend to be. Oh, I can talk to you. Oh, you are human. You do have faults. And so by coming down and coming to, you know, going to earth and saying, I'm just a normal person, and I am not perfect. Though, you know, you try to be perfect so you don't get shamed. So I think, I'm thinking next week is probably going to be a very important time for Hannah to spend together.
What do you hope for at least today in that time that you get to spend next week?
With him?
Yes.
That he has peace in his life and mm-hmm. he doesn't have shame. And, you know, when you're younger, you carry around things that really are not important. And they just burden you.
Yeah.
And I hope that he can be unburdened.
Is Josh in a relationship?
He is. But it's a long-term relationship, but they've separated at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But they both reassured me that they're not leaving each other. They're just taking a break.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I wonder what kind of release can happen for both of you, and especially him, and being able to just get this some mom time and human mom time.
Right. Without shame.
Yeah. So was he around when you raised him? Because then your family helped, because you were not feeling well at all. Mm-hmm. So like it took a village, I would imagine. And right. So they were around. Was he exposed, do you think, at least from what you remember or saw, to a lot of the shame that they put on you?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was not, up until recently, I didn't even recognize some of it myself. So I don't think it was something that we can go, oh, well, that was shame coming from the family. I think it was something that you've learned to live with because mm-hmm. it's there. And you don't go, oh, well, this is really what's happening. Because I wasn't doing it. And I'm sure without a doubt, I've done it to him. Because it's generational. Mm-hmm. I can't just say, okay, well, I'm not going to pass on the shame
sure.
factor that I was given.
Sure. But what do you do different, though, than maybe your parents didn't do for you that you want to do with your child?
Oh, I loved him wholeheartedly. And that was, it wasn't quite that way for me as mm-hmm. a child. He knew that no matter what, I was there for him. Mm-hmm. I would never disown him, which I was disowned at one point in my life. Mm. I would always be there for him. And that I would do things with him.
And in terms of being disowned, is that partly why you left home so young?
No, I left and then was disowned.
Mm. Because you left?
No, I left because it was a very abusive. We were beat. Mm. I was beat. It was not a happy home.
No. And I would imagine that impacted a lot of the relationships that you ended up being
yes.
in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably, again, I know you here in front of me today. What I sense, and my senses could be off, but is that you're a woman who's got some firm boundaries now.
Oh, yes.
You know who you are and maybe who you're not. Yeah. But you ain't going to take no shit.
No.
I appreciate that about you.
Thank you.
At 18, were you the kind of person, deep down I would imagine you were the kind of woman that weren't going to take no shit, but was that out in front, in the forefront? Was that buried?
I think part of it was out front and part of it was, even though I was that way, I was still extremely naive. I was still extremely young. So I've always been, I think, fairly assertive and maybe not as self-confident as I thought I was. Mm. But I think I've always been there.
Where'd you go at 18? Where'd you go from and then to? Where did you leave from?
I got an apartment and had a job at a bank.
You stayed in your hometown?
Yes.
Okay.
And then banking does not suit me.
Why?
Well, I'm more of an artistic.
Yes.
Got to get up and move. If I'm not doing something artistic, then I need to get up and move kind of person. Mm-hmm. So sitting behind a bank back then, being a teller when you can't afford to eat, mm-hmm. but you're handling $20,000 a day for other people. I'm sorry. That was not a happy time.
Wow. Yeah. There's a long time you couldn't afford to eat, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. About how long?
I probably struggled with food for several years. I mean, not that I went hungry all the time, but there were times that people at work would feed me because I didn't have anything to eat.
Yeah.
So.
This is a no-duh thing, but maybe it's not a no-duh thing. I had the luxury, and I told you about being in Portland last week doing mm-hmm. this festival that we have. We tested 711 people in 5 days, and Oregon has a really high homeless population. And there was this woman, Betty, and her blind dog, Boomer, and she was in her motorized wheelchair, and she volunteered with us every single day and helped us raise through, we had earplugs because it was loud, and so we'd ask for a dollar, suggested donation, and we had a dung tank. Well, she helped us raise over $1,200.
Wow.
And because we were vendors there, we got access to just whatever kind of food, and it was, cold cuts and whatever. And this one day I had eaten what I wanted. I brought her a plate back. And her response just really touched me. And this is where the no-duh thing is, but I was just like, we'll never forget. And you just reminded me where I brought her this plate of food. It wasn't the best, greatest plate of food. But she said, wow, how'd you guys know? And I was like, what? Mm. She said, finding good food when you're homeless is the hardest part. And it was just like, how much of this sandwich did I just throw away because I'm like, I'm full or I'm lost my appetite or whatever. And Betty, I mean, she made that food last all day. And then we'd bring another plate because it was dinner and be like, Betty, like, it's okay, here's another plate, you know? And like, wow, how humble and right-sizing for me it is to be able to be helpful, but also be able to get some humility and feel real humble around, wow, this was a sandwich. And that's hard to get for a lot of people.
It is. Yes, I was homeless once. And I tell you what, the soup kitchen, at least in Tampa, back in 1977, whatever it was, they made cabbage soup, which was really just water.
Yeah.
That tasted like cabbage. And I think I was grateful for it, but it really didn't, nutritionally provide any it didn't provide any nutrition at all.
Anything that you can remember from those struggle days of being homeless and having a hard time eating and working, but not being able to necessarily afford certain things, what sticks out to you? And even something like, I never want to eat cabbage soup again, or...
Or sage.
Or sage.
Because a homeless shelter put so much sage in the turkey and the dressing. That I don't have to be afraid. That homelessness is very uncomfortable, but it's also very, very hard to get out of. And so when people are homeless and they need a help up, they really need a help up, because if you don't have an alarm clock and you don't have a way to get clean, can you go get a job? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't get your hair cut, you can't do this or you can't do that. And I know a lot of homeless people have mental issues, but not everybody does. You know, and we're all just one meal away from being homeless.
Right. Yeah, we are. I wonder, you know, in our culture, we would assume that there's shame that would go along with homelessness. And here's a woman like standing in front of me who got out of a shame-filled home. I'm going to just assume probably some shame and maybe inducing relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Got out of homelessness, which carries its own shame. Found a cure for herself from the largest infectious disease outbreak of our time. And you only got it pretty much just like everybody else, it's in our blood because the government gave you, we didn't know what we didn't know, but the government gave you, medical system, tainted blood. And those things, you're not in any of those places anymore. And the amount of shame that's been released, I feel lighter, and I haven't been homeless and I haven't been cured of Hep C. What does that mean for you? Like, what are the opportunities with that? What does that feel like?
For the first time, really, I mean, I'm very mission-oriented. I do stuff with the Native Americans. I do a lot of volunteer work. But there's so many people. It's like, I want to shout out to the world. Okay, you know, there's a cure. There's people to help you. Being cured of hepatitis C, I feel like I have a whole new lifespan in front of me, that I will live to be 100. And so I've got 40 more years to live a great life. I just bought a horse and she had a filly. And people think I'm crazy. I'm like, really? How can I be crazy? That's what I want to do. That's my dream. I'm not going to wait till I'm 90 to do it.
And it feels good, I bet.
It feels great. But, you know, what's funny is that people are coming to me. Mm. It's once I let go of the shame, then all of a sudden people that I thought in the past, I thought, well, why don't you invite me to your party? Or why don't you do this? Even though they got dogs from me, we were still like friends. But now it's like I've opened up and they are coming in droves to me. And I'm like, okay, I don't have time for everybody.
So what does that mean for you now in terms of boundaries? Like knowing that, like, that's great. You probably love that. And it's like, bye, I want my own space now.
Right. Well, you know, I'm kind of conflicted as to how I'm going to deal with it at this point. But part of me getting buying the farm is there's two other houses on the farm that I actually want to remodel, two other houses that people can come and stay. And I help train service dogs. And so kids with type 1 diabetes, I spend a lot of time with. And so I bought the filly, the mare, because she's extensively trained and very gentle, so the kids could ride her. Mm. And so the fact that I'm actually, it's like building the baseball field and they'll come, that's kind of what I'm doing, and they're coming before I'm ready, though.
Yeah, right?
So.
Wow, how beautiful. So assuming that some of what you have to do is not just with kids with type 1 diabetes. It's with curing people of Hep C and helping them in whatever way possible to release some of that shame. And you don't have to have an answer for me right now. And maybe your answer next week would be different if I asked you. But where do you and I go now? What do we do together?
I want to help you help people.
How? Tell me, what I want to do?
Only thing I can think of and what I feel like doing is shouting from the top of the buildings.
That might be a little dangerous.
Well, yeah, I agree, but I don't know else how to. Yes. I'm telling people, you know, and I know, and I'm willing to do it on social media, and I'm big on social media, and people follow me, you know, and like I said, people have already responded. Like, my father just died of hepatitis C. I wish he had done this or he had done that, you know, and so I know there's people to help. It's just, how do you reach them? And I know I don't know exactly how far your reach is. But I'm sure there's much more to reach. So how do you do that?
Well, I think we continue to work together. We're both creative types. I think there's opportunity and we continue to do that. What I do know, puppies and babies sell.
Yes, they
do. Imagine if puppies had Hep C. People would be like, oh my God, give me this money to cure Hep C. You have access to puppies.
Yes, I do.
And babies and really pretty horses and wonder if there's a way that we can do that, because that's much more palatable to people than
that's an amazing idea, because I'm a photographer, and that, you know, the stories I still tell stories by my photos. And a lot of times, if you're on my social media, you don't see me saying a lot of words, because my story's coming through the photos. It's not through the words
and images,
because I can talk, but I'm not so good at writing it down. So the images sell. These images bring people in, you know, and the people follow my. So that's a great idea. I don't know how we would put it together,
but I think.
Yeah. Well, it's so right. If this puppy had hepatitis C, how many people would jump? Are you kidding me?
Puppies and babies.
They would be all in it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, what can we do? How do we sign up? How do we help?
Right.
What do we donate?
Right. So I don't know what it is, but there's something there for us. So. My friend will continue to save the world together.
Sounds good to me.
All right. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming to Chicago and sharing your story.
It's my pleasure.
Persevering, bringing my mom, Ozzy, and Gracie. And I guess I want to give you an opportunity to say anything else that you want to say in these moments.
I'm honored to be here. I'm honored to call you my friend. I'm honored, and I don't know if I said it earlier, I'm grateful that I had hepatitis C. It changed my life in a positive way. Otherwise, I might just lived partying and in shame for the rest of my life, or died of cirrhosis of liver from drinking, or whatever, but I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for telling my story. Thank you for inviting me to Chicago and making me part of your family.
You can't get rid of us now, so... Thanks, Kathy.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.